Dear listeners, welcome to Faces of Digital Health, a podcast about digital health and how healthcare systems around the world adopt technology, with me, Tiasza Zeitz. Today, we're diving into biotech and the potential of AI and predictive modeling to understand an individual's immune system function and predict treatment response. Technologies and AI models to help predict responses to cancer treatments are still in very early stages. We dream about precision medicine and getting every answer we can for ourselves when we get sick. But if we look at genomics, only about 20% of human coding genes are well studied. The rest, 80%, which is about 16,000 genes, along with the proteins they make, all this is still largely a mystery. So in this episode, you will hear a little bit more about the field of immuno-oncology, understanding the correlation between tumor development and immune system response, trends in cancer detection and prevention, especially liquid biopsies, which are tests for detecting tumors in blood samples. I spoke with Brian Hashemi, Executive Chairman and CEO of Novigenics, a Swiss-based biotech company using AI and RNA sequence analysis to capture the cancer immunity cycle during the multi-stage disease progression and response to therapy. Enjoy the show, and if you haven't yet, make sure to check out our newsletter, which you can find at fodh.substack.com. That's fodh.substack.com. Now let's dive in today's discussion. Brian, hi, and thank you for joining me on Faces of Digital Health to discuss healthcare innovation and biotech in Switzerland and also the advancements in liquid biopsy. Three out of four highest valued European companies are from Switzerland. This is also the country where Novigenics, the company that you are running, is based in. The two strong companies in Switzerland are Roche and Novartis, and generally speaking, biotech in Switzerland is very strong. So I'm really wondering, what does that mean to you, to your company? How did this impact the whole company development and everything that you do?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I actually grew up and had my professional career in the United States. And at some point, I was looking to see where in the world would make sense to establish myself in order to nurture innovation that will make an impact on healthcare. And this was maybe 15 years ago, and Switzerland really came across as a very upcoming innovative place in terms of early technology innovation and testing and adoption. And that has proven to be the case. 15 years later, I can attest to that. It is a very conservative country. As you can imagine, there's a lot of emphasis on quality, on risk mitigation. It's very risk averse culturally as a society. However, it's at the same time at the leading edge of innovation and science and technology. So a number of innovation parks, whether it's here at the Biopol where we're based, or at the EPFL or at TU Zurich in Zurich, there's quite a lot of innovation also within the hospital settings and a lot of spin-outs, a lot of programs to help companies get their orientation into the world and to see how their innovation can make an impact and make a positive impact in healthcare. That's one side of it. The other side of it, it is a very good market to test products because it is quite demanding. And so often companies, whether from all over Europe or from the United States, will often use Switzerland as a test market to bring their products initially because it is a good self-pay market, meaning that there is a high value paid for technology that will make a big impact. And people like to try new things that are the latest technologies as long as they meet certain quality and certain level of in terms of approvals. And it is a wonderful country to also test things. It's multicultural, four different languages. And therefore, it's proven to be a phenomenal landscape. Myself, I worked in this space of understanding of the immune system role in adaptation, particularly in space flight at NASA. And then when I came across this opportunity, it became clear that we can use immune cells to better understand what is happening in cancer patients, starting from early detection of cancer before people even have symptoms, so before they even know that they have cancer developing in their body, all the way through predicting now response to therapies, being able to understand the immune profile of an individual and contextualize that within the therapeutic landscape and the therapeutic journey of the patient, and being able to help drive therapy innovation in order to improve patient outcomes. So that has proven to be a phenomenal landscape in order to bring products out, test products, and develop products.
It's interesting that you mentioned the fact that Switzerland is multilingual as an advantage. I would perceive it as more of a hurdle that you actually need to take care of three or four languages from the get-go.
You're absolutely, it's a hurdle. So if you get through and you succeed here, you're going to succeed anywhere. And I think that's where people look at it. If we can bring a product into Switzerland and make it work, we learn a lot very quickly. And then it becomes easier when you go elsewhere. So that is, but and you have a good self-pay market, so you can actually get paid for the technologies that you bring to the market.
Yeah, interesting angle. I know that French startups or French entrepreneurs would say that if you succeed in France, you can succeed anywhere just because of the bureaucracy part. So I guess every market has its own specificities in terms of what difficulties you can take as a stepping stone and an advantage because you already had to go through something very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If we dig a bit further in what you started explaining, and that is the role and the insight we can draw from the immune system to either detect and detect diseases, analyze responses to treatments, let's talk a bit more about that. So how much do we actually know already and can measure effectively the impact basically of the immune system? Yeah. What's actually measurable and tangible that we can use for these purposes?
Excellent. We've made a lot of progress in the 20 years since the completion of the Human Genome Project. A lot of the focus had been on, I would say, over the last 10, 15 years of it has been on the tumor itself. Mutations and methylations and evolution of the tumor now being able to be captured initially was in the tumor itself, but now being able to be captured in liquid biopsy. So there are a number of, for example, FDA approved tests and technologies that are with liquid biopsy able to pick up small signals from the tumor that inform us of what's happening to the tumor and tumor evolution. As time has gone, the industry has learned more and more the importance role of the immune function. And I think after COVID, everybody understands the importance of RNA, the importance of the immune function, and how it can really impact health and health outcomes. And that has been also the case in the field of oncology. So the whole field of immuno-oncology is all about activating and driving the immune system towards killing the cancer. So you have this balance between the evolution of the cancer, its ability to evade the immune system and immune escape, and the immune system trying to keep up with the tumor and the cancer and being able to overcome the changes that it makes to itself and to chase it and to take control of it. And this is a very intricate balance. And when the immune system is ahead, the cancer is under control or it's shrinking. When the cancer gets ahead, it can evade the immune system, or even it can come back as a new form of disease because it's constantly evolving as a disease. Liquid biopsies become extremely important in giving us insight into what's happening because with tumor biopsy, you're limited to the tumor site. And as the cancer is evolving, different parts of the body, you want to have a systemic view of how it's evolving. And so liquid biopsies in tumor mutational burden or tumor mutations is very mature. And what we're doing today, which is quite a new frontier that's opening up, is being able to, through liquid biopsy, be able to look at the RNA in blood, in whole blood. So in one tube of blood, let's say 2 mL of blood, you have 2 million circulating immune cells. Imagine what you can learn from 2 million cells if you can get into their operating system and read what parts of the operating system are up or down regulated and be able to do that repeatedly. whether it's before the cancer, during the cancer, or after first treatment, after cycles, certain cycles of treatment. And all of that married to AI to be able to identify signals that are predictive. So not only being able to understand immune features that are contributing to heterogeneity of the disease, right? So every cancer patient is as unique as the tumor that is growing in the patient. And what we need to understand is that uniqueness and how that actually contributes to their therapeutic journey. Having an understanding of the heterogeneity of the immune function using liquid biopsy, as well as the heterogeneity or evolution of the tumor, is really a new opportunity to leverage large data sets, very precise data sets that you can generate today, and marry that with AI to be able to get insights that were not possible before. So we're quite excited about closing that loop of what the tumor is doing, but also what the host immune system is doing, and be able to follow that with the patient and be able to create value within the healthcare system and the patient therapeutic journey.
Yeah, it's a completely different paradigm now in precision therapies, where you're not just trying to target the tumor necessarily, but trying to just find where do the influences come from, and basically indirectly impact the way that the tumor is going to react. When we talk about liquid biopsies, one of the big ideas is that sometime in the future, this could be a standard of care for screening, so that it would replace colonoscopies, for example. But we're not quite there yet. So colonoscopy is still the standard of care for early detection of colon cancer. How would you, kind of comment or describe where the field is at the moment? As you said, a lot of progress has been made. This is also not something completely new, but we still don't know a lot of things.
Yeah, colorectal cancer screening particularly is extremely important, not only because of the high prevalence rate and the high mortality rate of the disease, but also younger and younger people are developing the disease. In the United States, they've actually lowered the screening age. And you have a lot of people in their 30s and 40s that are developing colorectal cancer. And all of a sudden, by the time you have symptoms, it is a bit late. So you're in stage 3 or sometimes stage 4, where the therapeutic response is very low. So it's very important to pick up the disease at very early stages, ideally at the precancerous lesion, advanced adenoma, where it can easily be removed by colonoscopy and you actually block entering into the disease. But to do that, there are only two ways to do it, either with the stool test or with the liquid biopsy test. Stool tests have been around quite a long time, whether it's FIT or the most advanced stool test in the world is the Cologuard by Exact Sciences in the United States. They already have the second version FDA approved. But the problem there is the compliance. So you have low compliance to colonoscopy and you have low compliance to the stool test, which has to be done every 2 years. And therefore, most people are actually not screened. Most people in the world are not screened. The United States is trying to working hard to catch up, but it's with a lot of campaign and marketing and really pushing the stool test or colonoscopy into the bring visibility and forcing people to do that. But ideal world is where you go and do your annual checkup, where you're checking your cholesterol, the doctor checks the box, you have a blood draw alongside the other blood tubes that are being drawn anyways, and you're screened for colorectal cancer. Colonoscopy is a phenomenal tool for diagnosing the disease, staging the disease, or even removing polyps where you block the disease from going forward. But it's actually not the preferred tool for screening because screening is actually, colonoscopy is also not without a risk of perforation or a risk of adverse events. And also, most people, they really don't want to do it, and therefore it doesn't get done. So the opportunity there definitely is liquid biopsy. And we have had the first-in-class, best-in-class blood test for colorectal cancer screening on the Swiss market since 2014. And now we are seeing second-generation products coming out. We are building our own second-generation product. Most other tests in the market are looking at the DNA, which is limiting because the earlier you go into the disease state, the less of a tumor load you have, the less of a signal you have, and the performance of the test fall. Whether you look at Cologuard, if they try and do it in blood, or whether you look at Guardant's blood test, or whether you look at other people who have developed blood tests, the performance for advanced adenoma is very low. So the opportunity here for us is to leverage the immune system, which is, of course, the first defense of the body against abnormalities, and picking up weak signals in the immune cells that are responding to the cancer and completing the picture by multiplexing that signal with the tumor signal. And that is extremely promising. We're very excited about that, and we continue pushing the boundary of that in being able to complete that picture and be able to have high-performing blood tests that will change that standard of care for screening applications. Of course, say if you're positive for those tests, then you're going to go into colonoscopy more for therapeutic colonoscopy rather than screening colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. If you have a positive test, of course, you wouldn't mind going to colonoscopy, but normally healthy individuals that don't have symptoms are not preferring to do that.
Your specific tool or liquid biopsy that you offer in the colorectal cancer space is already on the market. It's been used by clinicians. What kind of patients did usually get it? So how do clinicians decide to actually test patients with this test? And where do you see the biggest challenges? I don't know, is it trust from the clinicians? How are you approaching these questions?
Yeah, it's a very good question. The ease of use is extremely important. What we have seen on the Swiss market with the broad test that we have on the Swiss market for quite some years now, it is for people who are at age where they should be screened, who do not want to do colonoscopy, and who do not want to do a stool test. So that's really how the product currently is positioned. Therefore, and what really inspires us is we do get individuals. I go to 50th birthday party of a friend of mine, and I said, weren't you working on this test? I did that test. It was positive, and thank God, because I went to colonoscopy, and they found the early stages of cancer, and they removed it. So we get these real cases, which really inspires us to really continue pushing the boundaries. The limitation that we have in the current test is that you have to isolate the immune cells from the blood of the patient and make the measurements that we need. And that requires that you have to process a sample within 2 hours. And that's a big limitation. We're able to do it in Switzerland, in a small market area that we're in. Over 6,000 people have paid out of their pocket to do this test. It's very convenient. Me, myself, that's the test that I do. That's my test of choice that I do. But to really get market adoption around the world and global adoption, you really need to simplify that pre-analytic. And that is really what we're working on today on the next generation test. We published some results last year at ASCO GI in San Francisco and at ESMO in Madrid. And we're seeing extremely good performances in whole blood, stabilized whole blood RNA. And that is really what we're pushing towards, is bringing out a solution that is very easy to implement in routine medical practice, where you just draw the blood, it can sit on the table for a couple of days, and you can still process it and batch it and ship it. When that happens, I think it will really be transformational in terms of screening and being able to pick cancer early and where you have a high therapeutic response. Not only it's much, much better for the individual and the patient, not only will save a lot of lives, but also it's much better for the healthcare system, because you avoid all of the costs associated with treating a cancer patient with often not very good outcomes by picking up very early and intercepting the disease.
There are still some reservations around liquid biopsy and its broader use, and I want to really pick your brain around that. For example, last year, the NHS tested the Galeri test, which is a blood test for more than 50 forms of cancer. This was just a test, so it was a study, and basically the results show that 2/3 of the included patients were correctly revealed. So the test correctly revealed 2/3 of cancers among those in the study. So when you think about it from the other perspective, that means that basically 1/3 or 30% of patients weren't correctly diagnosed, which seems quite a high number. There's this notion that we want to have 100% accuracy with these tests. So how do you see these challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we have to peel that out in different layers. So first of all, there are a couple of approaches for multi-cancer tests. And those have proven to have this difficulty, as you mentioned. You cannot send one third of the population on a goose chase around trying to figure out what's wrong with them because of the false positive rate of a test. And that is a challenge with a couple of tests that one of them is even approved for marketing. So the healthcare system struggled with that, the patients struggled with that, and it's absolutely very important that the performances of the tests are up where they need to be, which is better than 90%. So 90%, over 90% specificity. So there, it is a technology evolution question. And you can remember the first TVs before it went to the next generation, before it became flat screen, before it became portable. So, of course, it is an evolution of the technology landscape. And as we go through that technology evolution, we are getting there. Definitely, there are significant leaps being made in terms of advancement of the performance of these tests. But if you look at single cancer tests, such as the Colox that we have on the Swiss market, we have a specificity of 92%, a sensitivity of about 80%. So we're pushing those boundaries along. The beauty of colorectal cancer is that false positives are just simply taking you to standard of care. So you're doing nothing more than just doing the colonoscopy that you were recommended to do if you have a false positive. And so we really focus on reducing false negatives and making sure we capture every cancer patient. So there, I think there's a huge opportunity. We see a lot of improvement in performance of the test with the ctDNA, and we see a lot of improvement opportunities within the immune function and multiplexing those things together, where we believe that is going to be a reality. From a physician point of view, I think they are really interested to know that the test is well proven. And typically, for example, if you look at a FIT test, it's been around for 2 decades. And so it's become, even though the performance of a FIT test are not very good, nevertheless, they have become relatively accepted. Liquid biopsies are very new. So we're talking about, we launched our product in 2014, 2015 timeframe. Of course, it takes a decade or two for people to become familiar with it, to see the test results, and to start getting mass adoption. Like I said, in the very small market that we are, we've sold over 6,000 tests without really doing any sales and marketing. We don't have a sales and marketing team. Why? Because, like I said, the pre-analytic complexity of the test, it's just being adopted naturally by the market, by physicians who see the importance of screening of individuals that are not doing colonoscopy or not doing the stool test, or individuals who actually educate their physician on the importance of it and that they would like to do this liquid biopsy test and pay out of their pocket. The next generation tests will get mass adoption because the pre-analytic complexity is being removed, and therefore you can be anywhere in the world and have a simple blood test to be able to screen for colorectal.
If we move away from colon cancer screening for a while, your solution is also addressing basically clinical trials and drug development. So can you talk a little bit about how exactly are you helping reduce the drug development timelines?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Turns out, actually, to predict response of a patient to a therapeutic modality, a lot of it does have to do with the immune function. So initially, that was discovered in the tumor microenvironment, where you look at the penetration, for example, of immune cells in the tumor, or the proximity and the organization of immune cells within the tumor microenvironment. What we've learned over the years, and that's now well documented, is that those signals actually do come and make themselves in blood. And that opens up a huge opportunity where you can actually sample immune cells in the blood to learn about what is happening between the interaction of the host immune system to the tumor. And there, what we have shown now is that you are able to predict who is going to respond to a particular immunotherapy. For example, in bladder cancer patients treated with anti-PD-1, which is an immunotherapy, you get anywhere between 20, 30, 40% response maximum. Now, what about those who are not responding? They're still getting the drug for months and months, and at the end, they're not responding, which is a terrible service to the patient, meaning that they're dealing with a lot of toxicities, they're dealing with a lot of impact on quality of life, and not going to other treatment modalities because they think that I have to finish the cycles. What we've been able to demonstrate is that we are able to vectorize the patients by looking at, once they get the treatment, how the immune system of the patient is responding, and developing predictive algorithms that can show whether this person is going to respond 6 months from now or not. And this sort of new world of being able to use, leverage AI and predictive modeling is completely disruptive in terms of being able to show to a physician or to a patient what your immune system is actually doing, being able to get into the operating system of the immune function of the patient and extract knowledge about what's going on there. So there, if you think of the individuals that are not responding, you can ask the question, why? What is the mechanism of resistance? Are there immune features that are predictive of resistance? And are there ways to target those mechanisms of resistance to overcome that resistance in those patients? So that brings us into combination therapies, and where we're able to identify drug targets within the patient population. Traditional drug development starts with animal models, cell lines, hypothesis-driven discovery, and going into an attrition model where finally you may come to a first-in-man in a clinical trial phase one, where you've spent years and years, typically 10 years by the time you get there, 8 to 10 years. And we can actually shrink that timeline significantly, shave off about 5 to 6 years off of that by actually developing the targets within the patient population by having a blood sample from the patients that are not responding and asking the question, what do we do to overcome this resistance? So that's where we are today. We have novel drug targets we've discovered both in CRC as well as in bladder cancer patients within immunotherapy. And we're very excited about the opportunity to improve the therapeutic modalities, particularly within combination therapies, to accelerate development of new therapeutic modalities for better patient outcomes.
It would be a dream come true that if you get sick, that you would just do a few tests and the doctors would be able to just prescribe exactly what you need. But unfortunately, we are far from that. Even when you look at genomics, there's only about 20% of human coding genes that are well studied. So 80% are largely still a mystery. And I wonder, where are we with that when it comes to the immune system? So
that's an excellent question. Yeah.
How much do we already know? How much do we still don't know?
Absolutely. I think we have come far in terms of the tumor microenvironment. With liquid biopsy, the beauty of liquid biopsy is that the data aggregation can go very quick. You just have to get into clinical trials. So today we have a new program we're establishing with the NIH, which has 3,500 blood samples from patients that have gone through immunotherapy, 5 time points per patient. And this sort of data aggregation and scaling is what is absolutely needed in order to get visibility into the heterogeneity of immune function of a human being and its response to therapy. With the screening environment, we're already aggregating quite a lot of data. We're accelerating that. Within the therapeutic environment, we're also starting to accelerate aggregating that. Fortunately, there are clinical trials that have already collected these samples and biobank them, phase 3 clinical trials that have been completed. So it's just a matter of analyzing and onboarding those samples on our platform in order to really get a much deeper visibility and better prediction modeling as time goes on. So I would say we're really at the cusp of that inflection point where the technology has proven itself, where the cost of doing this sort of work has come down to a point where it becomes feasible to do. The kind of work that we're doing per blood sample used to cost initially $10,000 per blood sample. That came down to about $1,000. It came down to about $600 when we moved our whole platform there. And now we can do it with around $400 to $500, and that cost pressure is constantly coming down. So as that cost pressure is coming down, bringing the cost down, you can imagine a day, I don't think it's going to be very far from the future, where we get a visibility into the tumor state of the patient using a liquid biopsy, at the same time getting a visibility on the immune response and immune state of the patient, and contextualizing that within the peer group of the patient. So if you're a bladder cancer patient with your peer group of bladder cancer patients, your bladder cancer patient within peer group of cancer patients in general, and contextualizing that within the healthy population. And that is going to what is going to be driving visibility into the heterogeneity of the disease, heterogeneity of the immune function, and tailoring therapies for the individuals. I don't believe that we are very far from that. We have all the tools and the technologies at play. We're getting aggregation of the data. Different platforms are scaling now in terms of capacity, both in terms of data generation, as well as, importantly, data analysis. we're able to set up virtual servers overnight, parallel virtual servers. This was not possible historically. Now, for the first time in the cloud, we're able to compute significant amounts of data that was not imaginable just a few years ago. And all of that is contributing and accelerating. So it's really, it's an exponential learning curve. It is not a linear learning curve. And we're really on that exponential part of the curve. So that is what keeps us very excited as we work into different patient populations.
What are some of the next steps that you wish to see in the development of the field? You mentioned that basically we have a lot of opportunities because of the technologies and because of the computing power and everything that we can do. But still, when patients get treated, if they're not a part of a clinical trial and there for a specific research, when they just get treated, they just get treated based on all the existing knowledge. You don't use the patient to try to get all the information and data about that patient to then derive new findings about this type of a patient. I don't know if that makes sense, but basically what I'm trying to say is that there's a lot of untapped opportunity in the real world data that we're not quite using and translating back into research just yet.
So that's a very good question. So real world evidence generation is extremely important. We haven't announced that yet, but we will soon be doing that. We have been chosen to become member of the largest immunotherapy consortium in Europe. And so we're very excited. And real world evidence generation to tap into is exactly, as you say, routine, everyday clinical practice in order to identify opportunities to improve those outcomes. Having said that, the FDA has also become extremely interested in leveraging liquid biopsies as well as novel bioinformatic and biomarker technology to optimize and build a much more modernized clinical trial environment. There were just two calls that we applied to for the FDA, which are very large studies and large programs, to leverage exactly that, to bring more precision insights into development of therapies. Because at the end of the day, that's what goes into the guidelines. It takes time. It is a very conservative field for good reasons, where technologies have to be well-tested, proven before they're brought into routine practice, which can be frustrating because it can be a very slow process. But at the same time, once it does come out, it's well proven, it's vetted. And we will see more and more routine practice as healthcare systems around the world go more focused on healthcare outcomes as a readout rather than what's just in the guidelines. There are very, very novel opportunities to actually leverage technologies to improve patient outcomes and reduce healthcare costs. And we see both the regulators and the payer systems extremely interested and keen in getting that done. So again, as the cost of these technologies coming down, those opportunities expand rapidly, because you can imagine if you have to spend several thousand dollars to analyze one blood sample, it makes it cost prohibitive. But as those cost structures are coming down, it's just exponentially accelerating those opportunities and adoption of those technologies. So I'm actually extremely excited and optimistic about how both the regulators and the payer systems, as well as the research community, are very much keen on adopting new ways of looking at things and new ways of improving patient outcomes, which we see in our clinical trials and clinical data that we get.
Just one last question before we wrap up. What's the biggest challenge that you have in the development of your solutions or scaling? We mentioned earlier that you're present on the Swiss market. I don't know to which extent you are looking beyond the Swiss borders in Europe and the US. So maybe a quick comment around that.
Yeah, regulation is a key barrier to new novel technologies in healthcare for good reasons. In Europe, it's much more fragmented, so it becomes much more difficult to go country by country, whereas in the United States, you have one big homogeneous healthcare system. So we absolutely do have a bridge that we have built, and we continue expanding into the United States while at the same time working with local research organizations as well as government agencies that are funding and are healthcare system driven in order to bring our new solutions into the market. Those are pathways that we're pursuing every day with both our clinical studies as well as our partnerships. And those partnerships are critical. right? You're not going to, as a small company, get rapid adoption if you decide to do it all by your own. And so we're very keen on that, both the partnership with biopharma partners that we have and we continue expanding, working with, as well as large institutions such as the NIH, MD Anderson, and others. And then also in Europe, we work with University K. Leuven and others in order to rapidly expand the reach of those organizations onto our platform and making it available. That's also the beauty of being able to look at decentralized data generation, centralized data analytics, which has been the core strategy of the company. So now that we have more and more maturity, more and more a demonstration of capability of biomarkers in validated data sets, that is extremely helpful in terms of now getting rapid adoption into the market. So for us, it's really about partnerships and about last mile to the patient, which we're leveraging established channels and established partners into the market in order to accelerate that.
You've been listening to Faces of Digital Health, a proud member of the Health Podcast Network. If you enjoyed the show, do leave a rating or a review wherever you get your podcast, subscribe to the show, or follow us on LinkedIn. Additionally, check out our newsletter. You can find it at fodh.substack.com. That's fodh.substack.com. Stay tuned.